Thanks for listening to the Best of the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weeknight from 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. Eastern, 7 to 11 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every night on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon on Fox Sports Radio.
Thank you all for your wishes and asking how I am and hoping that I'm okay after the Super Bowl yesterday. And I maintain what I always say after every bleeping time the Patriots win the Super Bowl.
What's
Here's
one
why
more?
Brady's the greatest of all time.
I've
seen it now. I've seen it 100 times.
And they you see it 100 times in your nightmares. But,
right,
but did it prepare you for the fact that the Ewok went to Walt Disney World and was in the Jedi training? How cool was that? They trained an Ewok. Yeah, he was shaven, but he was still there.
Let me quote Jason Smith, America. It's just another ship for the Patriots.
It's not
That's
a ship.
Right.
It's not a ship.
That's right. He had his captain's hat on, and Tom Brady brought that thing home.
Not a ship. Not a ship. Not
Number
a ship.
Six. No. He's got a whole fleet, man. He's got six ships.
Three, the first one was hard because they had the plays, and then that spawned the dynasty because John Casey kicked it out of bounds, and the Eagles wouldn't hurry up during the Super Bowl. And I'm like, okay, but then after the first three, I'm like, okay, I've seen it. How bad? They won again. Okay, they won again. I'm fine with it.
Now they're ready to get back to work.
They won again. I'm okay.
Dominate you and your okay. Jets again.
Well, this is it. I mean, this is it. This clearly
you
is.
You guys have been saying this
clearly,
forever.
No, this is clearly.
Every one of you. Oh, they're dead. They're done. How many years we got to play this same
damn record? This is clearly the bookend Super Bowl. This is how they played in the first one when Brady was terrible, but somehow they pulled it out. And the same thing happened that Brady wasn't very good, and they pulled it out. It did the beginning in 2001, the end in 2019.
Yeah, but look at this team this year. Top 10 scoring defense.
It doesn't matter.
You have a run game and an offensive line that absolutely obliterated games. Now, you had some big plays early on, the stopping and stuffing of screens. Fowler and Aaron Donald did their jobs.
Yeah, big plays all day. They scored 13 points.
Well, when it mattered, what happened?
13 points.
Here's the pass down to the
13 points.
Victory.
13 points.
Still 10 more than their opponent.
Well, the Rams obviously are a little bit lower than the
Patriots. Did you see how many big plays Harmon had on that game, too?
I tell you,
Harmon was there.
Harmon had a lot of good plays. But just because the sheer number of times I have seen them win, it's okay. I mean, really, I'm okay with it because my friends still email me and it's awesome they do and say, oh, you are right with it. Yeah. I'm like, yeah, because.
Well, but it's good to know you have people care.
All they do, look, they're there every year and they win every other year. And now it's six and then it's going to be, we're going for seven. The only thing that really upsets me, and I'm being honest with you, the only thing that upsets me after the Patriots won the Super Bowl yesterday, is that now I have to watch because they ran it yesterday and there's going to be the parade this week. Everybody's saying, see, the world counted us out. Nobody thought we could win. Belichick even did it after the game yesterday. Yes, we overcame odds. No, you didn't overcome anything. Okay? You had a home game in the playoffs and a bye. You didn't overcome. Nobody thought you could. There's two teams that can win the Super Bowl. So stop telling me no. Because you were the favorite going off. It's like they made this up, and they're like standing there. Yes, we're the underdogs.
Yeah, but that's the great thing.
We're the underdogs.
Is if that's what the chip that got them the ship, that's all that matters. How you like that? How's that for hot takery?
Stand.
The chip that got them the ship.
That's not hot takery.
Say it 4,000 times. It got it. They got to the final, man. They had
like a Doritos commercial.
They were able to pick up pockets full of confetti and celebrate.
Look,
whatever works.
They can't stand people hating them. They can't.
Who does? Who likes being hated?
Everybody understands.
Like in radio, we tolerate it.
Everybody understands.
Hate us, don't be indifferent.
Everybody understands.
We'll put the derision and hate
back.
When
you do something creative for a living, and when you do say, you're going to have people love you and people hate you.
I mean,
and
even you're sitting
Patriots,
4 feet from me and you hate me right now.
Absolutely. I just want the Patriots to embrace who they are. And at this point, people to so okay then. But instead, it's oh, we overcame odds and people doubted us and all that. No, they can't stand not being loved. They still want to play the hey, still love us because we're no, you're the overwhelming favorites because you go to every Super Bowl. You've been to 45 in a row. I mean, whether you have the other team's plays or not, you get there and the level of excellence that you've had almost 20 years now. Stop telling me yes, we've you overcame zero odds this year. Zero odds. You won football games. You were the better team in these games. You were favored in these games. You had home games in the playoffs.
See,
but yet still, the odds we've overcome. One odd they've overcome. What did they overcome? Oh, we lost Josh Gordon. Oh,
well, they beat
really?
The Chiefs.
That's an odd?
Hey, he's going to get a ring.
That's good. That's an odd you overcame? So you lost a guy.
And Edelman was gone for the first four
games.
You lost
a guy. You lost a guy. Okay, and he came back 12 weeks. And, oh, by the way, he was the MVP of the Super Bowl.
That?
So how did you overcome odds?
That's kind of interesting, though.
Like, he was four weeks fresher.
I was looking for Sony Michel to maybe pick that up. Maybe one of the defensive backs. Maybe McCourty. Maybe Gilmore. Instead, you get the Ewok, and he gets it done.
Well, of course he's going to. The guy had 40. The guy had 100 catches yesterday. I mean, somehow in a 13-3 game, he almost broke Jerry Rice's record.
Pretty good, and it just keep feeding him the ball, including a couple big plays. Obviously, that four-play drive that ended with the, or I should say five-play drive that ended with the Sony Michel touchdown run. But you go through, and I guess there's two things. I mean, you look at the videos they kept putting up on Instagram all week. They know they're hated. And they're winking and mocking you the whole time.
No, we
and then they play the
odds.
Other thing. Because that was always my problem with LeBron James when he went to Miami. He couldn't deal with the hate either.
Well, he still can't deal with it.
Well, no, he still can't. But at that point, look, as soon as he went home to Cleveland, he thought that was going to erase everything. No, no, no. Now it's you broke the NBA. Because now everybody wants to do what you did.
Yeah, but the Patriots were everybody loved the Patriots the first few years, and now it's like we're tired of them. Look at the ratings come in; it's one of the lowest rated Super Bowls since 2009.
So depending on when you were rating it,
it was a bad game. And
it was a great game. It was a defensive struggle.
Okay, it was not a great game.
Yes, it was.
Okay, you know what was a great defensive game is if you saw so many great defensive plays that were made.
We saw a number of them.
You didn't see. You just saw incomplete passes. You saw teams not getting. Not getting third and four. I mean, you didn't see it. Wow, what a great! You saw a couple of great defense. McCourty made a great defensive play. Gilman
Harmon made a great defensive play.
But it's not like you saw up and down. This wasn't. Oh my goodness, defense. There's this huge breakup.
No,
here,
it was not the
defense.
Excellence of execution.
No, it wasn't.
That is absolutely true. And Sean McVay deserves all the criticism that he's taken and saying, "Hey, it's on me. I got to coach." Yeah, you did. Yeah, you did from start to end. You did. And Jared Goff. He shriveled in the moment. Todd Gurley, are we ever going to find out? Until he's actually in surgery, are we ever going to find out what's wrong with his knee? Or did someone break his psyche somewhere between, week 12 and now?
Be sure to catch live editions of the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon weekdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
The big line in A Few Good Men, what does Tom Cruise always say? A jury trial is about assigning blame.
That's right.
They want us to see Santiago. We want to give them Kendrick. It's about assigning blame. And clearly, the two biggest question marks coming off of this game, spent a lot of time on the Patriots last hour in the show, were Jared Goff and Todd Gurley. And Gurley, we talked to Jason Lockenfora last hour on the show, and he said, look, it was so hard. It's a mystery. But Todd Gurley looked like a guy who was tippy-toeing a little bit, and maybe his confidence wasn't there, and the Rams kind of got sucked into the game plan of, well, we can try to keep it close rather than try to go for the win. But this is really what it is with Todd Gurley. He was healthy. There's no way he wasn't. Jay Glazer sat across from us last Monday night in this studio a week ago tonight and looked at us and said, Todd Gurley is fine. Todd Gurley is healthy. He had the knee thing early on in the year, and it came up again towards the end of the regular season, but he was 100% healthy last week. They went with the hot hand. The hot hand was C.J. Anderson. So we know Todd Gurley was healthy. Sean McVay got so much off course with Todd Gurley. It's like... he realized that I'm going to focus on Jared Goff and getting him going. and we were defaulting to throwing the football and having Goff throw it. Because, look, it's not like C.J. Anderson had a ton of carries. It's not like, you know, he carried the ball 18 times and Todd Gurley had no. Todd Gurley had 11 touches, and look, it was an equal amount of
ineptitude and weak performance.
I was going to say distribution, but that's fine as well.
The offensive line that was so celebrated coming into this game got worked.
It was the same type of responsibility distribution between Todd Gurley and between C.J. Anderson. And I told you Friday night, the Patriots are not going to let C.J. Anderson beat them. If Todd Gurley runs well, the Rams are going to win. I said that when I picked the Rams, and Todd Gurley, and he's going to run well because he's the best running back in the NFL. And look what happened. They got away from him so much that he didn't have, whether it's confidence or whatever it is, but he's a guy that needs the bleeping football. You know, he's not a guy you can, we'll give him 11 carries and 5 carries. He's not Alvin Kamara. He's a guy that needs the football, and he runs teams over. He's the best running back in the game, and you still decided we're not going to use him that much. When he finally started to get a little bit of rhythm going, it was too late. It was late in the fourth quarter, and it's finally, Gurley, I got a little bit going on. He delivered a hit on the play that Chung broke his arm on. When they said Chung's got a broken arm, I said, because Todd Gurley just left. Now, it turned out, you know, he tried to make the tackle and turned away, and it was another player that Gurley hit. But I said, now you got it. He's ready. He's going. You got to get him the football. And it was like Sean McVay decided, no, we got to get Jared Goff going. Jared Goff stunk out loud. I haven't been able to say that for 2 years. Jared Goff stunk out loud.
You think it was hand size?
Stunk. He stunk. Whether he would have been better if he had no hands. He'd have Edward Scissorhands trying to throw the football on Sunday. He was absolutely terrible. His body language was awful. He looked like he had 1,000-yard stare on the sideline. There is nothing you can tell me that the coaches can say he's just about to turn it around. He's going to turn it around. Get him out there. Keep throwing. He's not going to turn it around. He was terrible. He was absolutely awful. So instead of giving him the football, give the football more to Todd Gurley. This wasn't a game that they were getting blown out right, where we have to throw the ball. It's a tie game. It's a 3-point game, and still they let Todd Gurley not run the football. Trust me. We go back and I say that Bill Belichick's big regret at the end of his career is going to be, why didn't Malcolm Butler play in the Super Bowl? Because they might have had another one had he just, for whatever reason, played Malcolm Butler, because he was a better option than anybody else they had playing defensive back. But we don't know why he benched him, and we're never going to know. That's going to be his big regret. Sean McVay is 33 years old. This could have been his last Super Bowl. And I guarantee you the big thing he's going to think at the end of his coaching career, when 33 years from now, when he's the same age as Belichick, he's going to say, why didn't I give the ball to Todd Gurley more?
Why didn't I give the ball to Todd Gurley more
in that game?
But that's the big thing here. Was he in the doghouse for some reason? Did they not have confidence? We talked with Jason Lockenfora, obviously Glazer in here. I mean, everybody tells me he checks out healthy. So what exactly is it? And then he finally busts off a big run, and you stop utilizing him. 10 carries, 35 yards, a long of 16. Yeah, he had one taken back by a holding penalty earlier, but the reality is you're in the game. Goff's not good, and maybe you could start working some semblance of play action eventually. Maybe if you're committing to the run that you'll be able to at least have one or two shots downfield that'll work. But in the end, your tight ends got blown up in blocking efforts. They were non-factors in the passing game. You look at the number of receptions here. Cooks with 8, Woods with 5, Reynolds 3, C.J. Anderson and Todd Gurley 2-1 respectively. Not like you were spreading the ball around. Not like you were having a lot of success. Cook has a ball hit his hands. Good play defensively to get in there, but the ball hits your hands. You got to make a play. And on the second, where Harmon. Yeah, he was there. But again, the ball's there. He had an opportunity to make a catch. He's got to come down with one of those. That's what you're paid to do, right? And those were the only two passes Goff threw all night that were any good.
Yeah,
he struggled mightily. But for Todd Gurley, it's going to be the question. What else is there? I mean, the LA Times had 142 people covering this game.
It's a lot of people.
Yeah. One of them has to uncover exactly what was going on with Todd Gurley, because there's got to be another story here. There's got to be something deeper.
I like Jason Lockenfora's explanation that it was a combination of his lack of confidence and the Rams moving the game plan. And that's on Sean McVay, because C.J. Anderson, what are you trying to do? Are you trying to get 3 yards or are you trying to win the football game? You saw the only – they finally started to get a little bit of momentum, and it was because Gurley was running the football. And then they had that horrific holding penalty that called back a big Gurley run for 15 yards and a first down in the fourth quarter when the game was tied 3-3, and that was really it. Then Todd Gurley did nothing after that. They give it to him on 3rd and 22, and he gets tackled in the backfield. I mean, really, that should have been a play where it's okay. Gurley's going to get at least 10 or 12 yards here, and he gets tackled in the backfield. All right, trust me, this is going to be the biggest regret of Sean Payton's coaching career. He's going to look back with time to look back at the Super Bowl and watch the film, and he's going to go, "My goodness, my quarterback was terrible. And I didn't do anything to try to get him off track." Now, I'm sure he thought in the game, getting him off track is get him out, throw in the football, high percentage passes. Nothing was working. Goff was terrible. He was awful, and mentally he was shot. I mean, he looked like he was – I mean, watching him in the national anthem when he's sitting there looking and his hand is shaking as he's, you know, tapping his fingers on his shoulder pad. And that's the look he had the whole game, walking off the field, staring up at the score. There was nothing. He looked like he was playing in a trance. But when that happens, you know what? Hey, Todd Gurley, let's give him the football. Let's get back to what turned us into such a great offensive team. And remember in the beginning of the season when we said the best way, the only way to slow down this Rams offense is to turn them into a running team. And what all that's going to do is stop them from lighting up the scoreboard, because if you make them run, it's going to take them longer time to get down the field, and maybe the offense gets a little bit more tired, and they're not going to put up as many points because it takes a longer time to run the football down than it does to throw it. But you're going to get your points. And, you know, you went away from, here's a pretty good quarterback, and Goff is pretty good in this system. I mean, I think Goff is one of those guys, if he's in a good system, he's good. If he's not in the right system for him, he's going to be terrible. So that's a guy you decided, we're going to go with him rather than Todd Gurley. Then Todd Gurley was someone who I saw go out there and at least, okay, towards the end, he started getting at it. He started getting into rhythm and started getting the football, and Jared Goff never was there. So I don't understand why it wasn't a heavy – it's a 3-3 game, and I don't get why it wasn't a heavy –
Well, no, and that's just it. It goes back to the same thing that we talked about when you get down to it with the Patriots and why it's so great on a larger scale, and whether you want to get into GOAT conversations or not, it's patience with your offense. All right, we found something that's working. Go to it. You saw what happened when the Patriots went away from the run game right away. Throws an interception. I mean, bad ball. He's late. It gets batted. Like, you're running the ball down the throat. Stick with it. Don't get cute. Make them stop you a couple of times before you go away. With the Rams, offense has been stymied all day. And obviously the question becomes, and it's flowing out a little bit from the Bears game now, of, well, what happens with Jared Goff once communication's not there with McVay and the defense is better at disguising what they're throwing up at you and they keep moving until you snap the ball? So, you know, that's one of those things that'll carry over into 2019 as well about Jared Goff and his ability to process, you know, at the end of the play clock running down. But, yes, the Todd Gurley mystery, we'll go with Malcolm Butler. Back-to-back years of two
and
of the more
Super
curious
Bowl
things.
When you think about
what
this
do we
game,
got? Yeah.
As bad as it was, you're going to say, why was it that? When you look back, it's going to be, boy, the interception Jared Goff threw, and why didn't Todd Gurley?
You paid this guy $45 million. Why are you not using him?
I don't get it. I really don't get it. That was such a horrible mistake. I mean, that's what he's going to think about. The end of his career, I should have given the ball to Todd Gurley more in the Super Bowl.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon weekdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific.
Let's go over the things we were right about for the Super Bowl and things I was wrong about.
All right, can't get it all.
What was I right about? I was right about Todd Gurley would have to run well or the Rams would lose. 100%. Bang. Said it Friday night. If Todd Gurley runs well, the Rams are going to win. If not, they're going to lose.
He didn't have to do anything. And they still could have won that game with one or two plays.
He did,
you know, make a play,
well.
Brandon Cooks.
I was scared Belichick was going to do to the Rams what he did to the Chiefs in the first half of the AFC Championship game. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what happened. Except he did it to Jared Goff for the entire game. And Bill Belichick doing what he did to Mahomes. As good as these young quarterbacks are, the first time Bill Belichick faces them, he's got a plan. He makes them do what they don't want to do, what they're not comfortable doing, and hence we see exactly why they're able to win the Super Bowl.
I think they carried Brian Flores all the way down to Miami.
I think they did. Yeah.
I think they sent a contingent of Miami Dolphins fans and said, our guy, look at him.
How many years until Flores says, oh my God, I got to get out of here. This is terrible.
I give it three.
Hey, will you take me back?
Over under 2.5.
The third thing was that the Rams defense was going to make it miserable for Tom Brady, and he would have his normal, when I'm pressured, I throw the ball early and into the ground game, and that's exactly what Brady did. There are people around him, he throws it early and he throws it into the ground. It's not rocket science, it's what's happened to him whenever you just get people around him for the past 15 years or so.
They made some good plays on screens, blowing those up, so it became the, all right, hesitation of what you saw off the first pass, right? The first ball gets intercepted off a deflection, so all the screens then became a, all right, I'm going to hold it that extra second and then say, all right, forget it. The coverage is there. There's too much traffic. Just throw it into the dirt. But when time came, he was on the money for the one drive that mattered.
So what was I wrong about? The Rams would have enough. Rams would have enough offense to win. They could still be playing this game, and they would still have 3 points.
No, they were terrible.
They did not have enough, not even close, to have enough offense. I said Julian Edelman wouldn't have a big game, and for some reason, when he was having a big game, Wade Phillips decided we're not going to roll coverages toward him. The best I can come up with is that the philosophy was they're not getting to the end zone.
No,
they're
but
not
that's
scoring
it. It's
points.
The bend,
so we'll
bend,
keep it the way
break.
We are.
You let them move between the 20s. Have it all day. I mean, look, you ended up having one drive where Brady made that throw to Gronkowski. And for whatever else you say about Brady's performance the rest of the day, on that drive, he was brilliant in that throw to Gronkowski. If he rolls into the end zone, are we praising Tom Brady today? Mm-hmm. I don't know. Is it that's it? It's a yard and a half when Sony Michel walks in on the next play, but because it didn't add a one to Tom Brady's touchdown column, suddenly he was awful all through? I mean, come on now. But for Edelman, it was move between the 20s and get the tackles and keep him at bay. And for Wade Phillips, I got to think you're going in saying, if we hold him to 13, we win going away, don't we?
And that's the third thing. The third thing that I got wrong.
Was really wrong.
I said the Rams would win. Was wrong.
You know who had the Patriots winning?
So you had the Patriots winning.
Yes, I did.
Yes.
Although we both thought there'd be points scored in this game.
13-3. No one had the under.
Well, you saw it was 400-1 on them scoring 3 points.
Woo-wee. So there you go. What we were right about, what we were wrong about for the Super Bowl.
Tom Brady could do that.
I said the Rams were going to win.
Tom Brady could do that.
That lack of experience just did it.
And then they went to Disney World.
Yeah.
They were Jedi.
Disney World today.
They were who's Woody, who's Buzz. That was kind of funny.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon weekdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
The big news in the NBA today, and look, I get it. We're on day after the Super Bowl hangover. We got so much stuff to get to with Goff and Gurley and the Patriots. But the news today that the Lakers have made a more robust bid for Anthony Davis means this deal is going to get done. I see, you know when I see this? When I see the headline, Lakers improve their offer. It's like when you see a you know, you buy chocolate chip cookies and it says, now with more chocolate chips. And you say to yourself, why didn't they have more chocolate chips in the first place? Why was I buying that thing? More chocolate chips. You could put more chocolate chips and it should have been in from the beginning. But
something made with cheese that's right. Now cheesier.
Exactly.
So to speak.
Now with more cheese. Why not have cheese in there? I mean, why? Why are you shorting me on the cheese? I mean, cheese is not very expensive.
Well, but no, but you got to go out of your way to make sure there's still room for improvement, right? It's like when you started putting cheese in the crust of a pizza.
Yeah, but now
where else can we jam more cheese?
You may have
tipped the scales. Other than piling it on higher, there's not a whole lot you can do.
Yeah, well, he got out.
Jeez.
The Lakers have improved their offer. ESPN, the first to report this, that now
it couldn't go any worse. They lowballed. It's like a bag of balls.
I feel like the Pelicans expecting people not on the roster, and we're going to include Porzingis, but you don't have him. Doesn't matter. And Steph Curry.
Well, I mean, here's a
Warriors.
Trunk
yeah,
full.
Matter.
Here's a mystery trunk full of game used Laker gear of years past.
Oh, that's a Kareem game used jersey and goggles.
Might be.
The offer now includes Lonzo Ball, Brandon Ingram, Kyle Kuzma, as well as draft picks and salary cap relief to the Pelicans. The other players who are most often mentioned are Lance Stephenson and Michael Beasley. So the offer now has everybody in it, really, that the Pelicans could want. All that's missing is Magic Johnson's yacht.
Oh, it's a big yacht.
That's all that's missing.
Yeah,
all
no,
that's
missing
is that.
But, I mean, this
Lonzo
comes off of Saturday, right, where the veterans allegedly confronted Luke Walton. I want to know how realistic that was. Hey, guy, you know, was it just a conversation in the hallway? It's like, you know what, your rotations have been a little bit off. I'm looking for a couple more minutes. You know, this is what we expected, blah, blah, blah.
They're like, all I can do is read about my name being traded. What are you talking about? You want me to do more rotations? Look, maybe AD is just waiting for the Lakers to get their new coach before he says, yeah, this world going to trade. But seeing this offer out there now, this deal is going to get done. He's going to end up being a Laker for two reasons. One, now, is this a trade package that excites me? No, but obviously it excites the Pelicans. And it does have upside with Lonzo, Ingram, and Kuzma. There is mega upside to this if these guys can continue on and ascend. But they're complementary players. But you got to get what you get. And so now they're offering everybody the Pelicans could possibly want. Really, are you going to say, no, we're not doing this unless you put Josh Harden? I mean, come on, that's not going to happen. And if you're the Lakers now, you can maybe get back like a, hey, well, Jrue Holiday makes $25 million, but you can maybe get, you know, Peyton back or something. You can get something else back in this deal because they're adding, you know, four guys or five guys. You're going to be able to say, hey, you're taking guard minutes away from so-and-so. So now you have Peyton and you have Holiday and you have Lonzo. So now, you know, there's no, so maybe Peyton can come back. He's only making a couple million dollars. But the fact we know the Pelicans like this offer, they like this, they like these players. They wouldn't be talking to the Lakers about this if they weren't serious because they could just easily blow this off like you blow off the Knicks. When the Knicks say, hey, how about Porzingis? Well, he won't sign long term. All right, boom, that conversation's done. The other part why it's going to get done is nobody's coming over the top to top this offer. There are four teams that came out today that AD would sign long-term with. None of them are the Celtics, so scratch the Celtics. The Knicks have no assets to give, the Lakers. Then you have the Clippers and you have Milwaukee. Clippers and Milwaukee don't have the player. What are you going to give, Tobias Harris and Harrell? I mean, is that going to get it done? No, the guys with the most upside are the Lakers, so these trades that are out there where he could go, it's not going to get better than this. So at the end, by Thursday, maybe they can, you know, wheedle another draft pick out of the Lakers or something, but it's going to get done and he will be a Laker.
Now this is where it gets curious, right? Adrian Wojnarowski's got a couple more tweets from the last couple of minutes that while there have been discussions about Anthony Davis, there's still significant support within the organization to tell him to beat it and let the trade deadline expire where Davis remains in New Orleans. Followed up by saying Danny Ainge has encouraged them to wait until the offseason to negotiate with them. They remained determined to try to partner Davis with Kyrie Irving, even though you still have Kyrie Irving and his free agent plans up in the air. So, and not to mention AD's dad being part of the mix, right, in terms of trust and all of those things. Even though, you know, we've talked about it over the last couple of days, the idea being that every team would have done the same exact thing. You gave your body up, thank you, but you're not a max guy. We'll see you later.
And at least, no matter what happens, the Lakers have done the job they should have.
Well,
they've
at
offered
least,
the players.
Yeah,
they can't offer anything they don't have.
So at least they're giving you the optics that they're trying to do their job, right?
Yeah.
That's the whole. No, but that, like, the first offer was like a clown show. We talked about it as you're getting bombarded. No, please. Your fan. The only thing that wasn't included was you. Okay, that was it. Laker fan Justin Frostberg goes along in the deal.
Hey, it was a fair trade. I know one when I see one.
There you have it. But that was it. It was a clown show to start. And you know they're going to lowball, but the fact that that gets out, that's just people trying to embarrass one another. We talked about it. You can find the podcast on iTunes, The Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon. Download it. Give it 5 stars. We'll love you forever. Maybe come coast to coast. Give you a big warm hug. But now things are at least escalating to where we can talk about sensible front office moves or maybe reeks of desperation.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon weekdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific.
Joining us now on the hotline, as he has all season long, Fox Sports rules analyst, former VP of NFL officiating. You can follow him on Twitter at Mike Pereira. Mike, what's happening, my friend?
Hey, it's just another week. Now football is like over in the NFL. I don't know what the hell to do.
So how happy are you that there was only the most minor of officiating controversies during the game yesterday?
I really thought it was well officiated, and it's a good thing that it was. You know, I really feel like there's never been a game in NFL history where the officials were under so much pressure as yesterday, because with what had happened in New Orleans, and if it had happened again in the Super Bowl, then I think there would have been hell to pay, and I think the competition committee would have been forced to do something. I'm not sure if this doesn't, you know, cause everybody on the committee to relax a little bit and not take much in the way of action, but it was a very needed day for officiating.
Yeah, the one thing, and it's a very big play, and I want to get your take on this. Early in the fourth quarter, the Rams looked like they finally had some momentum going. It's a 3-3 tie. Todd Gurley breaks through for a 15-yard gain. The Rams are over midfield. And again, it's a 3-3 game at this point. And it gets called back for a holding penalty on the center of the Rams. Tony Romo didn't like it. I looked at it. I was kind of looking for where they could see a hold on that play. What did you make of that?
Well, I can see where they were looking. And, you know, what I really want to see, and I haven't as of yet, is the basically high end zone shot from behind the offensive line. Because, you know, I know Tony said that he didn't like it. And I think from the angle that we got the replay on, yes, I can see that. But it's not the same angle that the referee got. And often you hear, you know, hey, that's not a good call. And then replay comes up, and then there's the grab, and you see the hook, and you see the twist. And so I reserve judgment until I see that end zone copy. But I really do think, based on what they would have been looking at from the referee's position, that I'm going to say it probably was a good call, because people did go to the ground, and that's not the criteria just because they go to the ground. But considering that they only had 12 penalties called in the game, it's not like to me that it wasn't, it's not like it was not holding. And I think it was probably a good call.
A little bit of the twist. Mike, right off the jump, our guy Roby Coleman got his name in the books with the hit that got everybody a bit excited early on. The defenseless receiver commentary, and immediately, you know, the shenanigans being called by most in the social media of Roby Coleman being that guy one too
right.
late. But it seemed there was no football move, and from, I guess, the textbook definition to me, seemed to be the right call.
Well, I think it was almost like the repeat of the week before, the 2 weeks before, for his hit. You know, it's, to me, it didn't seem like the most egregious yet. It was helmet to helmet, and even though it was a back coming out of the backfield, a receiver is a receiver, so he's still considered defenseless unless he actually makes the catch, completes the process, and then can protect himself. But that wasn't the case here. It was an incomplete pass, and so it's probably one that's going to cost him at least another $26,000, because remember, that's what
right.
he got fined the week before. And if they double up, because this is two in 2 weeks, it may hit the $52,000 mark. But again, I didn't think it was the most egregious, but then I didn't even think the one against New Orleans was the most egregious. But the fact that they fined him, you know, the league certainly felt it was enough.
You know, one thing we saw, Mike, coming off the game last night, ratings were down the lowest since 2009. We still got 100 million people watching the Super Bowl, so I'd love to have my ratings down that much. It was only 100 million. Was it a bad game? Was it no offense? What was it, in your opinion?
Well, I think it's no offense to me, and a little bit of, you know, just kind of the general public maybe getting tired of the Patriots, you know, winning and being there year after year. But let's face it, we've become conditioned to offense. And when you saw the Chiefs and the Rams, whichever it was, 54-51, or these incredible scores that were thrown around, I think people enjoy offense more than they enjoy defense. The old guard kind of enjoys defensive football. But the Super Bowl crowd that is not necessarily, you know, your true football fan, I really do think they like to see the scoreboard lit up and to see a lot more offense. So, you know, to me, when you're watching the Rams get two first downs in the first half, I think it drove people either to the bar earlier or maybe to order that Super Bowl dinner early. But I wasn't surprised at all by the numbers.
Fox Sports Radio, the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon coming to you from the Geico Studio. On the hotline, the best in the business, former VP of officiating in the National Football League, rules analyst now at Fox Sports. You can follow him on Twitter at Mike Pereira. See the work he does with Dean Blandino. They break the stuff down, put it in our layman's term, and make us feel that much smarter going to the water cooler. And we thank you for that, Mike, making me feel a little bit better as I try to speak wisely on the playground with all the parents. Now, that being said, what does the NFL do with all these retirements? 2 years in a row, you got a mass exodus of your veteran officials. How do you absorb that 2 years in a row?
Yeah, that's not easy. And you know, now there's going to be two new referees, so you're going to have six referees. Only over a third of your referees are going to have really less than 2 years experience, and that's a big adjustment, and I think it hurt them a little bit you know, this year. And so with another at least minimum, and I've heard the number of five, the minimum number of retirements, you know, it's something that's going to be tough to deal with. So you know, everybody screams to have, they want younger officials. Well, younger doesn't necessarily mean they're better, so it's going to be interesting.
You know, it's funny, we have Jay Glazer on the show all the time, and he's had this idea for a couple of years of getting all former special forces guys from the military.
Navy SEALs and stuff.
Run up and down the field and go through the training, you know, all the pressure situations, they're conditioned to it. He thinks they'd be perfect officials.
Well, that's why I have my foundation. You know, I have a foundation called Battlefields to Ballfields, and we give scholarships to returning veterans to become sports officials in their communities. We've got 183 of them across the country now. And part of the reason that I wanted to start this is because, A, we never treat our veterans well enough, and B, I really do feel that veterans would make great officials because of the fact, you know, they're fearless, they rely on teamwork, they've got confidence, they've got a mission, all those things that, you know, especially courage, all that you need to be a good official. So I agree, if you can, you've got to have tough people who can stand up to the abuse that, you know, that they take from coaches and fans and media, and I think it's a great idea.
All right, I'm going to hook you up with Jay, and then just speak well of us when this winds up happening. And this
are you kidding me? Yeah. There's no way I wouldn't do that. Anybody like you two that cares as much about how much I drink on a weekly basis, I love you guys.
Well,
you
know,
I thought about. Usually, I like go like drive for a month as soon as the Super Bowl ends. But knowing I was talking to you again tonight, I've already broke that.
Well, I look forward to meeting up with you and sharing one of these days, Mike. We've had a blast with you this season. Always look forward to the conversations and furthering the cause to get people to understand exactly what goes into the decision-making process. It's always been a blessing for us.
Yeah, I've enjoyed it too, no question.
Hey, have fun. Have a glass of wine for us. Now your Monday nights will be Wine Mondays with Mike.
There you go.
That could be a podcast.
Right. I like that. That's a podcast in waiting right there.
Oh, Mike, thanks so much. Everything all season long has been so great. You stayed up late. You were on the road. It was awesome. Thank you so much. We really appreciate it.
You got it, guys.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon weekdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.